Hi, I'm Christy Scarrow, and in this interview series, I am speaking to experts who help leaders to have an influence, gain commitment from their teams, and make an impact. And today, I'm very happy to welcome Stephanie D. McKenzie. She is an award-winning marketer, multi-certified empowerment coach, 10-time author, speaker, former college professor, teaches high-achieving coaches, business owners, and leaders to be empowered personally and professionally. She even has a TED Talk and a new book that talks about lessons from being vulnerable and loving kryptonite. So welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you, Christy. Thank you so much for having me.
Glad you're here. So I want to start there with kryptoniting and kryptonite. Tell me a little bit about what that means.
Well, kryptoniting. So I have this thing, Christy, I like to make up words, but kryptoniting came about because of the TED Talk, which is called Lessons from Embracing Being Vulnerable and Loving Kryptonite. Anyway, but it deeper than that came the study of Superman. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all about superheroes over here. So I'm like, Superman and his kryptonite, you know, what if that's all the way wrong? You know, what's been depicted? Because oftentimes we are taught that kryptonite will weaken us. You know, kryptonite is bad. Kryptonite is something that should be avoided because of Superman. And I'm like, let's think about that. What if it's not? What if in those moments when we're just unable to save anybody else, that's when we're really doing the work to save ourselves, to rescue ourselves. And so kryptoniting is really a paradigm shift into the power of being vulnerable, to allowing what we consider to be our weaknesses to become our actual strengths.
Wow, that's really powerful. I love that idea because I think you're right. We focus sometimes on those weaknesses and they become excuses. But if you use it as something to embrace vulnerability, and that's something I know I've had to learn. So tell me about, you know, how you help or how you found people get to a place where they can embrace that and be vulnerable and accept kryptonite is not a horrible thing.
Right. I'll let you know when I get there. No, I'm kidding.
It's still a journey, right?
Right. It is. I mean, it's such a process, right? Because myself included, when you've had a life that was so focused on others and getting that external validation, it's really hard to turn inward in any shape, form, or fashion. You know, you think, oh, I don't have time for that. Oh, I'm being selfish if you're doing things for yourself. And so in the realization that what I have been taught over and over and over and over and over, and what I may have even taught others in the form of my children, my legacy, my offspring, and maybe even my team, it is incorrect or is not correct in totality, is quite a mind bender. And so before we even get to the lessons, we have to curate a willingness to learn and unlearn.
What are the some ways that you kind of start down that path? How do you start unlearn all these things that we've been taught all these years?
Well, I think for me, it's about, and this is going to sound so cliche and I apologize, but, you know, giving permission. Like creating the safe space. And as a coach, I demand mutual safe space. It's not just safe for my client, but it's safe for me as well, because I'm sharing, I'm giving, I'm excited. And so I think there should be a mutual safe space. But in that, creating that safe space that says, you know what, if you have felt like something you believed no longer is applicable to your life, hey, that's okay here. You don't have to be beholden to the set of beliefs or to the ideologies that you were connected to in your 30s, mm-hmm. or in your 20s, you know, or last week. You have the right to transform and evolve. Because I think a lot of people don't understand that just because you changed your mind, that doesn't make you flaky. That doesn't make you, you know, wishy-washy. That just means you're evolving. There are so many things that I believed in my 30s that I no longer believe. There's so many things I believed up until about yesterday that I'm like, yeah, about that. That doesn't really resonate anymore. And just for the reason that it happened to come up and I had to think about it, like, yeah, no. So giving people the permission to transform and evolve and to release things that just don't resonate anymore, I think has proven to be really encouraging and powerful for them, because no one ever says that. I think people expect you to be the same person and just grow, you know, taller and larger. I think some people just expect that. And they're just like, oh, the nerve of you to change. And I'm like, the nerve of you to not.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that perspective. I'm a very strong believer myself that we almost hold too strongly to our beliefs because it sort of shapes who we are, and we don't want to let go even if it no longer serves us or we find new information. So I think that's a really interesting concept, that, you know, giving permission to go, what I thought yesterday, I don't think anymore, and that's okay. And I almost to expect it from what you said. We need to go through that transformation. We need to let go of certain beliefs, I think, to get to a better place.
Absolutely. Especially if, and you know this, especially if they're formed from our little T or big T traumas, you know, from our traumatic states. And yesterday, it's so funny that we're talking about this, because I was talking about how trauma and the experiences that we have in our lives sometimes have us living life through a funhouse mirror. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing everything distorted. Everything is bigger. Some things are smaller. You know, and you're looking all crazy and you're thinking, this is my reality. And it's like, no, this is not your reality. This is a funhouse mirror. It is meant to distort everything. And until you reclaim and redefine and redesign your reality based on a clear head and a healthy perspective, then you're going to live life in a funhouse mirror.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the, you know, the individuals, maybe it's somebody, you know, on your own team or somebody, you know, that you feel like they are looking in a funhouse mirror, but they don't recognize it. Is there anything you can suggest to go, how do you pull people out of that? Or how do you help people, you know, see themselves in a different light?
I think, you know, and of course, everybody, some people will just live with the funhouse mirror. Like they like it, you know, and it's fine. But I think this is why who you're surrounded by becomes so meaningful. If you're surrounded by people that are saying, hey, that's not exactly right. Or better yet, hey, you're dead wrong. If you have people around you that are like that, great. If you have people around you that are like that, great. And you listen to them, even better. Because oftentimes it is the people around you that are going to either co-sign or, you know, not co-sign your nonsense and your foolery. And yeah. So if they're like, hey, you know, everybody has a funhouse mirror. Look at mine. Well, you may never get out of that hole because they're going to normalize the funhouse mirror for you. Mm-hmm. But if for some reason you're around people that say, hey, I know why you're looking in that mirror. However, I love you enough to tell you that that just might not be the perspective you want or deserve at this stage of your life.
Yeah, I think that takes bravery in some instances. There's some people who, you know, especially you're a manager, you bring people in, you're kind of looking for people who are going to agree with you or share your perspective. Whereas I love what you said there. No, you want people who are going to tell you you're wrong or question you or challenge you, because that will make you maybe look twice at, am I in the wrong spot? Am I in this funhouse mirror? So right. I love that perspective for sure.
You know, it's just, it's hard sometimes because some people are triggered by being wrong. They've never been allowed to be wrong. And so sometimes they'll push back from that feedback. And it's like, well, that's allowed. And then I just have to believe something greater than themselves will begin to put, you know, nudge them and poke them. And you know, we hope for the best.
Yeah, that's a good, I think you're right. That's some of the fear, is that if I kind of admit that this isn't, you know, this belief is wrong or whatever it is, that's something that's a weakness. And, you know, and I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to feel wrong. Instead of going, I want to be wrong. Like, tell me I'm wrong. Help me understand better, because right. I want to grow from it.
Exactly. So there's almost the need to transform our value system. What do we value? Because if I value being right all of the time, that means that I am threatened by the concept of correction. And if I can never be corrected, then I can never be uncomfortable. And if I never can be uncomfortable, then I never can grow.
Yeah. Yeah. You summed that up really, really well. I know it's something that's always a journey for me. Be less wrong. Don't worry about being right.
I love that. Be less wrong.
Yes. Be less wrong.
Yes.
So a term I love coming across. What's that?
Be more wrong. Be less right.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Somewhere in the middle of that.
Yeah, we
don't worry about being right. Be worrying about maybe being less wrong. I mean, you recognize you're wrong, and it's okay.
I like that. Okay.
I think that was you had to make me think about that. Maybe that.
Right. I got it. I got it. I was the slow one. It's fine.
No, you have been thinking maybe it's wrong to say. Anyway, we got
there. No, I was trying to. I was trying to pick up what you were putting down.
Yeah. No, I like it. You made me think, which was what the whole intention of this is. So to that point, when you were just making me think about it, when I saw on your website, and I liked this. Almost, I don't want to call it a catchphrase, but it's this message of, you said, get your shift together. Mm-hmm. And that just grabbed me as a concept of obviously transformation. And just, you know, tell me a bit about what that means to you, get your shift together.
I mean, it just depends what your shift is. There is such power in the shift, be it your thoughts, be it your relationships, be it your belief systems, be it your vision for yourself, be it your work, there's power in the shift. And oftentimes we don't harness it as humans. Sometimes we won't harness it because of the things that we talked about previously. But if we're willing to even consider that, you know what, I've been over here for a minute, what's over there? Or I've been over here for a minute, what's down there? You know, or what's within here? If I'm willing to ask questions of myself, not just look for an external, you know, fix or something that makes me feel good, you know, some sort of dopamine situation. If I'm willing to go within and talk to myself and ask myself real questions, then shift can happen.
Hmm. Yeah, back to being uncomfortable, right? You're right. Sometimes we like just, I know myself, I've had to learn this. I tend to seek joy and push away anything that's negative. But then if you don't allow yourself to sit in it, you don't allow yourself to kind of understand what it's telling you, then you're missing out. And if you're always kind of pushing that away and just finding that next happy spot, then you're not always thinking about, why is this bothering me? What's happening here?
Absolutely. And then sometimes we'll turn, you know, I have, you know, individuals, couples as well, but or someone that maybe was recently coupled that'll come and they'll say, yeah, you know, we broke up. And so, you know, I started back journaling and I'm going to the gym and I'm back in church and yada, yada. And I'm like, yeah, all of those things are good things, but did you go within? Have you even asked the question, why did I allow this dysfunctional toxic relationship to persist? Why did I let that one neon red flag keep going until I had more flags than the UN? Like, did you ask those questions? No. And so at the end of the day, what we do is, because it's easier to be external about it, right, than to be internal, because then we have to be a little bit culpable. And we, again, if you're triggered by being wrong or having to take responsibility in a way that, well, I thought I did everything right, that's going to be triggering. But I'm like, listen, if we don't allow ourselves the discomfort, then there's nothing that will come from this. It will be another relationship that has gone awry. And then in 6 months later, like this young lady, you'll have the same relationship with a different person. And you'll be wondering, well, why? Well, because you never shifted anything internally.
Yeah.
You went to the gym.
Yeah, you're right. It's just easy to pour yourself into all these new things to do. It's almost a distraction from what's really holding you back potentially. Absolutely. And then you put that at risk. So the next time you haven't actually fixed what was maybe broken, and then you repeat it. And I'm sure that happens for leaders and in teams as well as in personal relationships, right? Where you just don't. I wrote an article last week about blind spots for leaders. And I think similarly, it's you kind of go to the training, maybe you go do things that are externally, you feel like the right thing, but you don't necessarily look into what's behind that for you.
Exactly. And especially when, you know, that's so important when it comes to managing conflict amongst teams, right? Because oftentimes people vilify conflict. oh, no. I'm like, no. We don't want to argue, but we can have conflict because we can grow from conflict. We can develop new ideas. We can innovate. We can shift the entire trajectory of our outcomes with conflict. But if we only turn, like you say, if we just go to the conflict resolution, you know, class online, and we don't ever sit down as a team, as humans, and say, okay, what's going on? And by the way, this cannot break us. Okay, great. We're still going to hit our goals. Okay, great. Then we just have a fractured group of people.
Yeah, I like that. But you kind of put it within a boundary, because I'm a big believer in leaning into conflict and why we need more conflict. Absolutely. That's one of my main focuses. And so I like the idea of put your arms around the fact that this isn't going to break us, like that we have enough trust as a team that we can address this conflict without it, you know, without it causing issues. And in fact, probably removing some of those things that we're not addressing. So
absolutely.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely. One other thing I want to call on your website that caught my attention was this idea of make excuses or progress. that's a cool concept too. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, you know, so that came about, I think, when the healing firm was launched. So I have one coaching practice with three divisions, the relationship firm, the healing firm, and the launching firm. When the healing firm was launched, one of the commitments I made to myself was to be at my best. And so at that point, I was 240, and then I lost like 50 pounds. So I wanted to come in because I didn't want to be a health coach. That didn't look healthy. That just didn't make sense to me. Physician, heal thyself. So I had created the narrative. This is what I wanted to be. I wanted to be healthier. I knew I could do it. Well, I didn't actually. I just kept trying to do what I could to unlock the formula, and it worked. Okay, great. And so I encouraged other people to do the same, but people kept saying, well, what did you do? And I wouldn't tell them. And part of the reason why I wouldn't tell them is because I knew from a physiological standpoint, they didn't have the same conditions floating around in their body that I have floating around in mine. So at the end of the day, you can make excuses or you can make progress. You can sit around and you can say, oh my God, well, Stephanie didn't tell me what she did, or blah, 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 or I've tried this and it didn't work. And that, or you can make progress. You can commit to learning what your body likes. And then it gets expansive. You can commit to learning what is good for you in this season, or for your marriage, or for your excuses or progress, because either way, the clock is going to tick. You know, what's today? The 24th. In 2 days, it'll be the 26th. Next month, if you, God willing, we're all still here, it'll be February 24th. Let's just say in a month from now, February 24th, it's coming regardless.
Yeah.
So in 30 days, do you want to be still making excuses as to why you didn't start today? Because, you know, everybody always says they're going to start something new on Monday. Well, it's Monday. Welcome. So, or are you going to be saying, well, wow, look at what I was able to accomplish in these 30 days.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that way you've explained that. The mantra that I've really put into place, particularly this year, is, you know, make choices every day for big choices, you know, long-term, because it's those little everyday choices that can either be an excuse, right? Like, oh, I'm just not going to work out today. I'm not going to eat well today, or today I'm going to do this, and that's going to meet my long-term goals. So, great way of capturing that. So I'm sure I could pick your brain on lots of different things, Stephanie. I love your thought process, but I want to keep it short and sweet for the audience as well. But before we wrap up, a couple of things. One, I want to say you've got something that I'll put in the description that they can access, which is called a Super Shift Planner. So just give me a quick snapshot about what people are getting with that resource.
Everything. It's a planner that also has audio support. So you can print it out and make it your own, but use the PDF. And anytime you see headphones, you can click that. It'll take you to an audio where you will hear my voice explaining what that exercise is about. So there's planners for the day, for the week. There's information about abundance, dealing with hard conversations, affirmations. Literally, I threw the book in the book.
Cool. Well, that's a really great resource, and I'm going to check that out myself. So anything more than that I didn't ask you that you think's really important to share?
I would dare say if you're interested in learning more about kryptoniting, the book is available on Amazon. I was pleased to see it go number one in journal writing as well as in linguistics. And we chose linguistics because in addition to kryptoniting, there's about four more terms that we're introducing to the lexicon because I love words. And so we made up some new terms, one of which is protective intelligence. And I think that could be really powerful for teams as well as individuals. Some of the feedback that I've gotten from the book is that it could be used in corporate or in private settings. And that was affirming for me because that's what I was trying to do is bring in our right and our power of vulnerability, our right to be vulnerable and our power of vulnerability into every aspect of our lives. Like we don't have to just do that in our personal life and not do it in our professional life because it's meaningful either way. When we show up as our full and favorite self, as I like to say, it is powerful.
Yeah, I think that is important that people sometimes keep them too separate. And I do think they're intertwined and there are things that happen in some worlds that definitely affect your work and vice versa. So I'll put a link to that, to the book as well, because it sounds really interesting. So thank you so much, Stephanie, for your time today, for being a part of the conversation and sharing your expertise.
Thank you.